You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
7 months of political upheaval in Honduras started last June 28th when the democratically elected president, Manuel Zelaya, was forced out of the country at gunpoint by the Honduran military after he attempted to promote constitutional reform. This was followed by months of mass protests from Hondurans and repression from the new coup regime. Zelaya covertly returned to Honduras in September, taking refuge in the Brazilian embassy, but was not able to regain power. Now Pepe Lobo, a coup supporter, won orchestrated elections held in November and took office January 28th. While many Latin American countries refused to recognize the legitimacy of these elections, countries allied with the United States do so. Dawn Paley is an independent journalist. She's recently returned from Honduras, and she joins me in the studio today to give us an update on the current situation. Hi, Dawn.
Morning, Mordecai.
So what was the popular response to the inauguration that just took place for Pepe Lobo?
Well, the inauguration took place on January 28th. So what we had that day was the official ceremony, very small, very controlled, highly militarized, large police presence, and a notable presence of specific foreign dignitaries that have decided to recognize this new government of Honduras, so the presidency of Porfirio Lobo. And in the streets, there was massive demonstrations going out towards the airport in Tegucigalpa, from which Manuel Zelaya was shuttled from the Brazilian embassy, where he'd been, as you mentioned, since September, and removed from the country to the Dominican Republic. And the people held a parallel inauguration ceremony where they had the former minister of labor pass a presidential sash on to four members of the resistance movement, two grandmothers, one labor organizer, and another youth. So we have a massive popular movement, peaceful movement in Honduras that insists and wants the world to know that they do not consider this new government to be a legitimate government in Honduras.
And where does the Canadian government, Canadian business stand on this issue?
I mean, this question is become very obvious, I think, as we look at Canadian foreign policy throughout the world, and of course its own policy towards the people here inside Canada. So what you have is a recognition of the new government. Canada did hesitate to recognize the elections right after they took place because of they were fraudulent elections. They were held while there was a president instituted by the military actually in the presidency. And so they did put out a press release. Peter Kent stated, who's the junior foreign minister, he stated that they appeared to be free and fair elections, but there was no official recognition of those elections until the inauguration of Pepe Lobo in late January. And so Canada has decided to recognize this government, to no one's surprise. And of course, it's something that's expected to be very good for foreign direct investment and foreign investors at large in Honduras, including Canadian investors.
Now, one of Pepe Lobo's first political moves was to grant amnesty to everyone involved in the coup, judges, members of Congress, the military. What does that tell us?
Well, I think it's important to note that there are still political prisoners in Honduras that are part of the resistance movement that have not received amnesty. And there's people in exile, and of course there's been people assassinated and tortured and so on. And those people have not received amnesty. They're not safe. The amnesty has been granted to the elite military who have been involved in the coup d'etat. And it essentially is a reflection of what Central American politics have looked like essentially since the 1950s. Total impunity, and it will be no surprise if these people who have been granted this amnesty no longer, it's not to say they get the amnesty. It's not that they sort of drop off the political scene. They will certainly continue to be involved at very high levels in Honduran politics.
Now, it's a bit bizarre. The victim of the coup, Manuel Zelaya, was himself granted amnesty, but in exchange for being escorted, as you mentioned, to a plane that took him again out of the country, mm-hmm. and now resident in Dominican Republic. What future prospects does Manuel Zelaya have as an actor in the developments in his country, Honduras?
I think it's very important to make clear that the victims of the coup in Honduras are the Honduran people. And Manuel Zelaya is a symbolic sort of obviously very important person in this whole game, but the real victims of this coup are the Honduran people, and we can sort of go into that a little bit later. I am sure that he would not be safe. Manuel Zelaya would not be safe if he chose to continue to stay in Honduras. Had he been given that choice before the elections, there would have been massive popular support, and it would have really threatened the coup regime. So they had to keep him basically in hiding in the Brazilian embassy, and they now have to keep him outside. And I imagine that he will be obviously organizing in exile along with other people, other Hondurans in exile, and obviously in communication with the National Front of Resistance Against the Coup d'Etat as to what the next steps will be. I certainly don't see it being a priority on anyone's part to have him now run again for the presidency. The priority of the social movements is really to find a way to bring forth a constitutional assembly for constitutional reform in Honduras.
I'd like to get a little bit more into that, but maybe first you could tell me, are there, obviously the poverty has always been intense in Honduras for the mass of the people. Are there any particular crises in terms of their living conditions that they might be facing now?
Yeah, I can give a few examples of what people are saying is going to be some of the effects of this coup d'etat. One is I did numerous interviews with people who are seamstresses or who work in the maquilas, in the sweatshops in Honduras, which is by far the country's largest employer. And they were saying what they're expecting to see is essentially labor laws will be rolled back to pre-1950 standards. So it's sometimes hard for people to believe that things could get worse in terms of labor standards in a country that has built itself around exploitation. But they can, and what people are expecting to see is new labor laws that allow temporary contracting and part-time contracting of workers, for example, in sweatshops, which removes any small benefit they had, any small amount of job security that people had in the sweatshops. That's one example. People in mining communities, people that are living in communities that have been affected by mining, had fought very, very hard to have Zelaya institute a new mining law, and that was very close to passing. And what people now are expecting to see is that, in fact, when that law gets its third reading, it's going to be altered, and it's going to actually allow more foreign direct investment into that sector and more large-scale open pit mines in Honduras. So these are just a few examples of where people have struggled in Honduras, since the dawn of time, but really specifically labor struggles very strong since the 1950s and anti-mining struggles since the beginning of the 2000s. And they're saying these struggles, these laws, any small victories that people did have will be rolled back by this new government of Porfirio Lobo.
So you were also talking about the objectives and the prospects for the resistance movement. And they're now in a situation of reconsolidation of elite control. What do they tell you about their goals now in these circumstances and their prospects?
People in Honduras want a new constitution. They want a constitutional assembly, and they want constitutional reform. To people in resistance movements, ranging from organizations of indigenous people to labor organizations to ecumenical organizations to gay, lesbian, and transgender associations, all of these sectors see the need for a new constitution, and what that represents is structural change in Honduras, not just electing someone with a different, party or whatever it's going to be. People want a new constitution, and I think that is the main mobilizing force. Like, people are saying, when I was in Honduras, Mel was still in the embassy, Manuel Zelaya, and people, obviously they're saying, queremos a Mel, we want Mel back. But the demand, the fundamental demand is a new constitution. So what that means is that whatever the social movements now in Honduras are able to do in terms of mounting a long-term resistance where they are able to succeed and successfully gain popular control back over Honduras, it's going to mean fundamental change. It's not going to mean, that Manuel Zelaya comes back wearing a green T-shirt or something. So,
if that is the objective, are they discussing the questions of how do they form a political party, perhaps, or given the state of repression that can be anticipated, how much needs to be done clandestinely as well as publicly?
Well, on the issue of repression, COFALE, which is the main human rights organization in Honduras, has documented over 700 rights violations in the period since the coup to December. And COFALE is also saying that there's been close to 40 targeted political assassinations. So certainly a lot of the work does need to be done clandestinely. Actually, just a couple days ago, a young woman was disappeared, and then she was found. Her body was found the next day, and just very targeted, sort of dirty war style assassinations is what's happening in Honduras. In terms of talk of a political party, I mean, I heard people floating the idea. I think it's still too early. When I was in Honduras, it was a very, very sad and very difficult time to be there because the violence and the assassinations and the repression were continuing, but people were still sort of just getting over this loss, that they had failed to overturn the coup through mass mobilization every single day in the streets of Tegucigalpa, and they failed to overturn this coup d'etat. So it was almost a period where that the realization was starting to come home, and obviously with the consolidation of this coup through the inauguration of Pepe Lobo, I think that, you know, now the movements are obviously shifting gears, and I think that it's going to be people in exile, people inside Honduras, both openly and clandestinely, you know, getting together to organize what the political future of Honduras is going to be, because the coup regime is not going to be able to hold on. They are broke. I mean, not only do they not have popular support, but they don't have enough money to pay the teachers, the government employees. The list goes on. People's living conditions are very difficult in Honduras, and I think that this is a very, very short-term elite, but very miscalculated strategy to try to retain some control over the bipartisan political system.
Well, it's been great having this, and really helpful to have this insight into the current developments, Don. I've been speaking with Dawn Paley. She's an independent journalist. She has articles published in the Dominion newspaper. You can find those online at dominionpaper.ca.